This episode of Main Street Moxie is proudly sponsored by Meadowscapes, a division of Matt's Landscaping, and Elise Harney Real Estate.
Happy Earth Day, Mary. In addition to, it's Moxie Monday.
What a dynamic duo of days.
I know. It was as if it was written in the stars.
And it kind of was, because our next guest for April is Peter Lefferts, who is very much connected with the natural world through his artwork, through his writing, and through his music. So Peter, I've known for years. He's a very accomplished visual artist and landscape painter with a deep attachment to the Adirondacks. He also published in 2022 a book called What the Kek-Kek Saw, which was the Nautilus Book Award Gold winner for young adults.
Wow.
He's an all-around good human being, fun, curious, dare I say jolly. So I can't wait for you to meet him.
Awesome. Let's dive in. Meadowscapes highlights the natural beauty of your property and reintroduces native biodiversity. The landscapes they create have a positive environmental impact while making attractive outdoor living spaces for you, and it is beneficial to pollinators, birds, and wildlife species.
Their work focuses on removing invasive plants, restoring natural habitats, creating beautiful native meadows with custom seed mixes, and designing gardens and outdoor living spaces that flow with the rhythm of your land. Welcome home to your ecological paradise.
To learn more about Meadowscapes, call them at 860-824-1188 or visit them online at www.nativemeadowscapes.com.
Peter, so good to see you today.
It's great to be here.
Thank you for joining Thorin and me on Moxie, and we're just going to get right into it.
Excellent.
Okay, so how do you define the word Moxie?
Well, you know, you presented this question, and I got to say, my first impulse was a visual one, because having grown up in sort of the origin, nascent TV, black and white television, there were these films from the 1940s that were on. We had three TV stations back in the early 60s. And so my first impression was of like a mall from the 1940s. You know, and being a visual person, I could picture the rakish kind of angle of the hat and all this. Beyond that, my impulse was to look up the definition of Moxie.
Okay.
But you're not asking for that. You're asking for my definition. So my definition that I've come up with is Moxie is a playful sense of curiosity.
Okay.
I think curiosity is underlying it. And then this aspect of playfulness. And so that, I think, positions one in a way that observes life, engaged with life, but also knows how to hang back and take things in. And then, in that sense, I think Moxie is also a kind of situational awareness.
Oh.
Yeah, interesting.
That's new.
That's brand new to us.
Peter, you've already rung the bell and it's like 2 minutes in. Go ahead.
Well, it was just very important to me not to look up a definition. And to explore my own.
Yeah.
So you didn't type this into ChatGPT?
No. This is all original.
So given that definition,
yes,
how do you see that kind of working itself into your life?
So thinking back, I mean, I can think of many examples. One that came to mind is from 1993. In those days, was the personal assistant and road manager for the jazz baritone, saxophone player, composer Jerry Mulligan, played with Miles Davis, came up through the Duke Ellington band. And Jerry was invited to play with 9 other saxophone players at the Clinton inauguration.
In 1973.
This big HBO Quincy Jones event on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
Wow.
And so we were there for a few days. I was there with Jerry and his wife, Franca. And my job was to stick around and see the stage setting and things like that. So I got comfortable. I had an all-access pass. And we are there. It's finally the day of the event. There are 500,000 people out on the mall in front of the memorial. And all these names, the biggest names in showbiz at the time, were performing, including the 10 saxophone players that got up in a row and played for Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And so I am there. It's Kenny Rogers and Diana Ross have gone out and sung. I'm in the stage, backstage. The stage manager is sending out various people in waves of importance. And wave 1, 2, 3, 4 goes out. And finally, the stage manager says, anyone else? So I said, well, yeah, heck yes. So I went out on stage. Ray Charles is now leading America the Beautiful. And, you know, with Oprah, Michael Jackson, I could go on. And so I just went out and got in the back of the row and sang America the Beautiful with all these folks. And I thought, well, yeah, you don't turn down an opportunity like that.
No. No, that is moxie.
So, yeah.
And no one looked at you like, what are you doing here?
Nope. It's actually, I have the VHS, but you can see me in the back. There's a final shot panning, you know, over the crowd, and you can see me in the back standing there.
Like Zelig or Forrest Gump.
Right.
Just inserted into the street.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
All right. That is a moxie-fueled story,
I'd say.
Yeah.
One for the ages.
Another, maybe lesser, but equally as important to me. 2006, I was in a band. And I initiated, we booked to perform at the Colonial Theater in Canaan, in North Canaan at the time. And, I mean, my heart was pounding. You know, I do get stage fright. And, but I remember driving home with Claudia, my wife, after booking this gig. And she's just complimenting me. And I said, you know what? At the end of the day, you're dead. Might as well do it.
Right.
You know, that's what we're here to do.
So you really know how to take a compliment.
Or be very Sagittarian about it. Yes. Blunt.
Yes. So we wanted to get into your creative life.
Mm-hmm.
You're a writer.
I am.
You wrote an award-winning book recently.
Yeah.
You're a visual painter artist. And you're a musician.
Yes.
So is that common for someone to do all or several aspects of creativity, like kind of almost simultaneously?
I don't know how common it is. I don't know how many people really explore that within themselves. I think it may be more common than we think, in that I think a lot of visual artists may play an instrument as well. For my own sake, I decided to embrace that and wherever it leads me, rather than being a specific kind of gallery artist, let's say, who does, and I do landscapes, especially of the Adirondacks. And I just did not want to go to art school. I went to liberal arts college because I love sciences. I love the broad opportunities to learn, and those things all integrate in me. Mm-hmm. And so I just, in effect, gave myself permission to be all these things and explore these things and not feel I had to accentuate one thing And for better or worse, I'll say, you know, I think it's kind of hard to pin down. I do recall I was teaching. I teach a lot as well in my studio and also out. And I was presenting to a retirement group in Stockbridge. It's called Ollie. Mm-hmm. And one of the gentlemen in the group raised his hand. He had been a Pastel student of mine also, so I knew him. And he raised his hand and said, "If everything's already been done, how can I be original?"
Mm.
And I said, "Well, I don't concern myself with being original. It's more important to be authentic." And he nodded his head, yes. Mm-hmm, okay. He seemed satisfied. About 10 minutes later, his hand went up. "What do you mean by being authentic?" And I felt for me that meant, you know, this label artist is just so broad and undefined. It's more important to be me, to be Peter. And what does that mean through artistic creation? And I explained that to him, and then I think the light went on. But that's really what I mean. I am doing things with my visual art I never thought I would be doing.
Okay.
In terms of this particular body of work I'm building called Totality, which is inspired by the total eclipse of the sun. Mm-hmm. I was with Claudia and a group of people 10,000 feet up in the path of totality in 2017. We were in Wyoming. You know, had to be there. And in this body of work I'm creating, it is around the moon and the sun, and it gets cosmic and it gets grounded. And I discovered I could use decorative papers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm using mediums like diamond dust, and which, by the way, I had seen at the New Orleans Modern Art Museum, a work by Andy Warhol that had this beautiful red and then this shimmering. And I looked at the materials, diamond dust, you know, and I thought, well, Andy could afford diamond dust.
Honey, can I have your wedding ring? Yeah,
right. And so I looked it up and I got home, and it turns out actually what it is little glass flakes. It's not glitter, but it's little glass flakes that are highly reflective and shimmering.
Mm, okay.
About $8 a jar.
Oh,
so
affordable.
I can do that.
Yeah.
So with the diamond dust, I've even moved into rhinestones in this body of work because, for me, it's all the play of light. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what we are doing as visual artists. We are just exploring the effects of light and playing with light. And so I love the fact that these pieces, because of the nature of their materials, truly can only be experienced in real time.
Mm.
And this is art that AI cannot recreate. This is art that even printing or video cannot fully recreate. And I love that aspect about making art that is so immediate and so engaged with the ambient and surrounding light.
And it's ever changing then too.
It is. One of the surprising effects of that is it wants the viewer to slow down.
Mm.
To appreciate those changes in how light is refracted. I created a piece that I call Natal Night, which, first of all, I discovered this black 4.0. First, I was using black 3.0, which bills itself. It's out of England, bills itself as the blackest paint in the world. I thought, cool.
Yeah.
Well, then along came black 4.0.
Of course.
Which bills itself as the blackest paint in the universe.
Oh.
So I gotta have that.
Yeah. Like the best cup of coffee in the world.
Yes. Yeah. And so what I did was I found a night sky map of the month I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Printed that out, gridded it up, and on this 24x24-inch panel painted the blackest paint in the universe. I arranged the constellations, the Milky Way, all with rhinestones and diamond dust. And then I got these little, my planets are little cabochon gemstones. And it's just it glitters and it's endlessly differing.
Mm-hmm. Is it hanging anywhere?
In my studio.
Oh, okay. Media. Okay. Yep.
Yes, you're welcome to come see.
Okay.
So is it 3D in a way then?
It is 3D in a way. It's got the surface that is 3D.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So no way AI can do that.
I love that. Yeah. It's fully human.
Keeps you relevant.
Yeah. And so what I am doing with this body of work, I'm about halfway through it. I planned 144. You'll kind of pick up on my love of 12s and like 12 moons and other aspects of 12 and 6 and 9 and are a part of this. So I'm creating this 12s, 144 of these pieces, the smaller pieces that are 6 by 6, 9 by 12 or 12 by 12 inches. And I'm about halfway through that process now, at which point I plan to find a venue to present this as a totality.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've been doing in that regard is kind of hoarding and building. And then I dovetail that with creating works that are more ready for showing and galleries in the summer.
Are you still entranced with the Adirondacks? Is that still a fundamental piece of who you are? And
absolutely. Yes, it always will be. I first went to the Adirondacks, I think it's 7 or 9 years old, and immediately took a passion to the woods, the night. Over the decades, I've been going to our place in the Adirondacks, which is, it's off the grid. You can only get there by rowing a couple of lakes with a mile hike in between.
Wow.
That said, it's pretty comfortable. All the creature comforts are there without the trappings of electricity or cars. And I began to make it a practice to go alone. I also realized, hey, I can go there and paint and call it my job. You know, for the rest of the family, it's vacation.
Right.
And so I began doing that. And really going deep into nature and into the night and addressing my fears and understanding that it can be, I know nothing as dark and quiet as an Adirondack night when there's no moonlight and you can't see your hand in front of you.
And the axe murderer is in the woods.
Well, the axe murderer.
Because that's where I'm going.
The bears were always the embodiment of your worldly troubles and fears. The bear became a symbol that way. And I began to embrace the bear and learn from the bear. I feel that I learned to walk in the woods in silence. Big guy like me, I can walk without making a noise because that's what the bears do. So...
Isn't the common wisdom to make as much noise as possible so you don't cross paths?
Well, I look at it this way. I call it stealth, but I think that stealth is also a form of grace.
Mm.
When you're moving in nature in that quality, you are with nature and you are within that state of grace in nature. And it can change at the snap of a twig, your own or that other thing. And they're like, chipmunks don't break sticks like that.
Right. So is it about being one with nature then, being a part of it instead of being in it, you know, and forcing yourself on it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So do you go barefoot? Is that part of it?
I have, but I don't find that a necessity so much as being still.
Okay.
And maybe finding a place to sit.
Mm.
There's a technique I learned probably in my teens in some outdoor book. And it was instructive to sit for 5 minutes with your eyes closed in nature and identify everything you're hearing.
Mm.
You know, and eventually you might hear that distant brook or that way off plane in the sky. And just cataloging all of that. I found that when I opened my eyes, I felt that all of nature was looking at me and we were looking at each other. And I think that's a great technique for opening oneself to this deeper communion with nature, because we are nature.
Right. So how do you go from that to drawing inspiration and pinpointing something that, what happens to create the spark for a painting or a piece from that?
I think there's an aspect simply of showing up, but I also think along the lines of imagination and my mentor, my shamanic mentor, Don Oscar Mirakasada, loves to talk about disciplined imagination.
Okay.
Which I think is excellent because it's allowing for the creative spark to flourish, but it's not flailing, it's being channeled. And I find with my totality work, with my landscape painting, with my writing, that act of beginning feeds into that flow.
Okay.
I'll jump around a little bit and say that in shamanism, we talk about being the hollow bone.
Okay.
So in that sense, whatever is going on that is informing us, and it may be a healing or it may be inspiration to create, we are more the instrument of that creativity that is there and not necessarily the absolute driver of it.
So you're like a conduit?
Yes. Okay. Yes, in that sense, the hollow bone.
Yes.
So that energy, that unseen influence flows through you. A little story around that that's just very recently. As you know, I was sick recently. And I slept for hours and days and really went within. The deep direction of within. And I silently reached out to the ancestors and the ancient ones, benevolent, for guidance. It's got to be benevolent. And just please show me, and please guide me, please show me through this phase I'm going through. And last Sunday on our first... Claudia's and my first outing together since I was better. We went birding. We were headed up to Chatham to a nature preserve. Got in the car. Claudia always drives. And I said, you know, I'm feeling lucky. It's good to be out. It's a beautiful day. And we're driving along and said, I'm going to show you an eagle. And thinking, I had seen eagles. We had seen eagles on Indian Lake and Millerton. Frozen over, no eagles. Red-tailed hawks, yes. And we go up through Hillsdale, and we're driving north, get on a county road. I said, have we ever been on this road? She said, no, I don't think so. And we're going along, and I say, stop the car. That's an eagle. And soaring over a field was a giant bird. Not the profile of a bald eagle, which is flat. I said, I think that might be a golden eagle. So I got my binoculars out. I think Claudia was doubting me. It was like, get
not
out of
Claudia. Can't even picture that.
And sure enough, a golden eagle was soaring right in front of us. I mean, she got out and she said, that's the best look I've ever had at a golden eagle. Then we heard some whistling nearby of bald eagles. And sure enough, in the trees and on the ground around us were also bald eagles. We went around the bend to find out why, and there was a deer carcass that they were feeding on. But I'm saying this because for me, that's the kind of affirmation and sort of how the medicine works.
See, I'd be reaching for the Mucinex and you go for the ancients. Like, that's incredible. But that's what I've read about that, about spiritual practices that, and we want to talk about your spiritual life, that when the time to practice that is when you're not in crisis and you're not physically or mentally or emotionally sick. It's practicing it all through the good times, the okay times, so that when those feel the, that those illnesses happen, you've got it to draw upon. You're not just starting to do it right at that moment. Mm. Do you feel there's some truth to that?
Well, sure. I think that that's sort of a base layer. That's a basic practice that might keep us more attuned to that. And then I think at this time of crisis is a time for reaching out.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, it was good you got sick then.
Well, you know, I actually consider it, there is what we call a shamanic death and rebirth. And it's a lot of getting rid of the old. In this lineage, the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, which I am apprenticed in and initiated in, that kind of dense, limiting energy is referred to as hucha. And there are practices to release the hucha.
Mm.
I think that a sickness like that and the recovery is a profound release of that hucha.
Learn something new every day.
I know. I never thought of getting sick like that. But no, I mean, I think that you've always struck me as a walk the talk. Like, that you are living authentically and you're listening to the calls of creativity and trying to be a good human and not harming and always curious. And you love people. You know, you love interacting, you're a teacher. And I feel like that to keep all those things up at once requires a lot of energy. And that you find these practices to sustain and build the energy so that you can then give outward.
I agree. And thank you for that. Yes, I agree. In the doing of it, again, with that flowing, the energy is there. There are definitely times of renewal and just contracting away from that expanding energy into just recharging. It still is very important to me to have time alone. I love solitude.
Mm.
And the listening that comes with that. You know, and when I am alone and I'm specifically thinking of my time alone in the camp in the Adirondacks, there's a guitar. I've written songs. I've entertained myself. I might just spend an hour or two just practicing and then return to the silence.
Mm-hmm.
And I find whole days can go by where I don't speak English. I might just mimic the bird I hear. Or, you know, the ravens are some of my favorites. And they come to check you out, you know, and they make all kinds of hoops and hollers. And I know they're seeing me, you know, and I'm seeing them. I think they know that I'm seeing them. And not trying to make anything of that other than recognizing that communication. Because I think they communicate in ways far beyond our own.
Yeah.
So that energy that you were talking about, how does that funnel into your creative outlets then? Is that a necessity, you think?
I think so. I think that's the flow.
Yes.
And the well. Mm-hmm. And I remember back in college identifying for myself, creativity is kind of this well I could go down into and draw from. And to tap that.
Mm-hmm.
So then it becomes the channeling of it because I can't write all the time. I don't write, you know, and then paint. And music is there as a joy, and although I get joy from all of it, but I'd kind of like to prioritize music a bit in the upcoming years, the next handful of years. I'm having so much fun with it. But they are... I find them complementary to one another in taking the break from the visual, the painting, the words.
Mm-hmm.
And in writing, I find that one sentence can take days.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole lot. For my book, I did an awful lot of bad writing.
Mm-hmm.
and then realized, oh, this one word right here is worth those five. And it's so much better. Mm. And did I answer your question?
I think so to a certain extent, yeah. Okay. I was just curious about, you know, because it's a bit of a mindset perhaps, and you talking about the flow and energy, and I just wanted to see how you felt about that in regards to how it works with your, you know, creative outlets and your creations.
Yes. Yeah. So I find it's sort of like, go over here now.
Yeah.
Totality is... been a lot of my winter project in studio. Mm. Then come the spring and June. I've been attending this wonderful occasion up in the Adirondacks, Paint Camp. It's hosted by the publisher of Plein Air magazine, a man named Eric Rhodes. And it's a week long, based out of Paul Smith's college campus, a week long of 100 artists going outside and painting together. And so my priority will shift into that and that immediacy of painting on plein air, complete with its own set of challenges.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That brings me to a question.
Great.
Elise Harney Real Estate is the number one real estate agency for the tri-state region, and they provide a comprehensive overview of the regional market spanning Litchfield, Dutchess, Columbia, and Berkshire counties.
Elise Harney Real Estate serves 40 unique communities with 35 years of experience. They have a team of knowledgeable real estate professionals to work with you to buy or sell your house.
Their offices are located in Salisbury, Millerton, Norfolk, Falls Village, and Riverton, or you can visit them online at www.harneyrealestate.com.
How do you paint in a canoe? Like you're the picture that is on your Facebook page.
Which is a guideboat, an Adirondack guideboat, technically.
Whatever. It's in the water.
It's in the
water. And you've got an easel set up.
Yes.
And you're painting.
Yes, yes. That particular photo is a bit of a prop because I'm floating. I found that to paint from a boat, which I love to do, I usually run aground. I find a view and then just run the boat up on the shore. I've tried it floating with one anchor, and before long, the breeze is... aimed you in the other direction and you're trying to paint over your shoulder. So two anchors works, but I love to paint. We've got a big guideboat, wooden boat, over 100 years old, called a Westport boat, I believe named after Westport, New York on Lake Champlain. Mm-hmm. It's broad and beamy and safe. I can stand up and stretch my legs. And that is my favorite boat to go out and paint from. I've got spots that I traditionally row to that are back in a bog with a magnificent views of the high peaks. And it's my own. It's my own moment. I was there painting once as a thunderstorm came over the ridge. And I knew I don't have time to get out of here. So I covered my easel and painting with my raincoat and for 20 minutes got poured on while thunder and lightning were around me. And that, of course, I figured about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. It left and the sunlight shafting down afterwards was magnificent. And that's the painting I made.
That's maybe was that part of being... with nature, that you were just with it. And
yes.
That's the moment you were meant to capture.
I believe, so. Yes, yeah. I feel that way. And there's kind of the risk of, okay, I'm not in an aluminum canoe, but I'm in a boat.
Right. And you're not supposed to be out there, Peter.
Yeah. You're fried.
That's moxie. Yeah. You're going to die.
Yeah.
Well, most would have run away, but, you know, or, you know, gone ashore and gotten out of there, gotten cover. So I think from everything you've told us, it's you're one with nature in that moment, truly, in all aspects. And for most, 99% would have missed that moment because they weren't one with nature.
Out of fear.
Yeah.
Out of projection.
Yes.
Yeah. I love the sound of that. In honesty, you know, I have fear.
Well, yeah. How can we not?
Yes. Yeah.
That's human nature. It's animal nature.
Right. Right.
Does that go to, I read on your website, in regards to the mediums that you use, and I quote you on there saying, you grant yourself the full freedom to create with, and it quotes, whatever works. Is that part of that kind of mindset and approach then?
Absolutely. I've been teaching since the mid-90s.
Okay.
And I'm fond of recognizing and saying, the one who's learned the most from my teaching is me.
Right.
Because if I'm conveying an idea and there's still that blank look, it's not enough to just repeat.
Right.
It has to be rephrased. Mm-hmm. And that's honed not only my own understanding, but recognizing in others and myself those inhibiting mm-hmm. factors, mm-hmm. fear being the primary one.
Right. Because a lot of artists are very structured and they don't just go with the flow.
Yeah.
So that stuck out to me, and I mentioned it to Mary. I'm like, I want to discuss that a little bit because okay. you're so used to so many. They're so disciplined and so structured. So to mm-hmm. just be so organic about it, but I think that's the epitome of your work in so many ways.
I'll say so. And it's been a long road.
Yeah.
You know, doing what I've needed to do. This gets back to whatever works.
Yeah.
In making art, I like to say there are many, many techniques. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows them all.
Right.
I believe in one overriding technique, and that is whatever works. Mm. If it works, maybe you created a new technique.
Right, right.
And so, you know, that's allowing for that to happen.
Well, art is also forgiving. And I try to teach my daughter, she's a little perfectionist at 7 even, and when she's very artistic, and she's like, oh, it's not perfect. And I'm like, there is no perfect in art.
Right.
It's whatever you make it.
Yes.
That's what makes it unique to you and your artistry and your style or your technique with it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, therefore, this also stuck out to me so much because, you know, I've never encountered an artist who would say that.
Okay. I have my own take on perfection, too. And I think that perfection is not, we tend to want it to be identifiable as that.
Yes, yes.
When it's not, I think perfection is a bigger container mm-hmm. that allows for discovery, allows for failure.
Right.
And learning from failure.
Right.
I think that's more of the path to perfection in creating.
Have you failed?
Many, many times.
What makes you get back up again?
I got nothing better to do.
You're going to die.
And I'm going to die.
So why not? Do you feel that the lessons you've learned in the natural world, kind of the unpredictability of it, of the thunderstorm or whatever's coming through, helps you withstand the vagaries of, you know, normal life, your everyday?
Yes, in that it's taken me for a long time to realize that maybe my experience is not as common a one as it is common to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean that's not how everyone's doing it?
Right.
And embracing that. And I think perhaps my favorite example of that is my book mm-hmm. and what the Kek-Kek saw. And the Kek-Kek came to me as a young man rowing around on the lakes in the Adirondacks and hearing what are wood frogs going, Kek-Kek, Kek-Kek. That's mm-hmm. how I began to communicate with them. And I began to create this story around that and where the characters are animals of the North Woods. And what joy and discovery I've had going into those characters. And I would write out longhand up in camp and come home and rework it, build, and I'd put it aside for months while I painted and do other things. It took 10 years.
Oh, wow.
From inception to publication. Which brings to mind, I think, one of the essential qualities to pursue, and that is follow through. Mm. Don't give up.
That's moxie.
Yeah. Don't give up.
Yeah.
And don't give too much attachment to the outcome either.
Just, oh, interesting.
Just do it. And I'm writing this book thinking, man, people are going to think I'm weird because I'm so inside these animals.
Not you, Peter.
yeah, out with it.
Say the quiet part.
And it was important to me to give voice to the animals in as authentic a way as I could to the reality of these animals. In other words, my animals don't live in little houses, in clothes, underground. It is a predator and prey world. Mm-hmm. They know it.
Yeah.
They know their place in it. Once they began to speak and dialogue, and I really switched over. In the beginning, there was that part of me that is the teacher, and that is the naturalist, and wanted to have that come through a lot, like an aspect of teaching. And I did work with a wonderful editor, Virginia Watkins, who just gave me so many, 11 pages of suggested edits, many of them grammatical, mm-hmm. which I loved, but also conceptual. Mm-hmm. And it just really drew me into that needed level. And giving the animals their dialogue just took off. And I feel that's what, by sticking with it, by listening, by taking risk, mm-hmm. like maybe I am weird, by taking that risk, creating this book that I was fortunate to share with a friend through out of touch since high school, but sort of the upside to Facebook.
Right.
Mentioning this manuscript. Oh, and he's a publisher. Mm-hmm. Mostly volumes of poetry and things. Well, please send us your manuscript. And then heard back, we'd like to publish this.
Wow. So, wow.
Yeah.
That's the universe.
Yes. Yeah. And so just off and running that way. That was in the beginning of 2022. Then I quietly looked for appropriate places to submit it, perhaps for an award, and didn't tell anyone. I found Nautilus Book Awards. Their motto is "Better Books for a Better World."
Oh, I like that.
And it just looked like a good fit.
Yeah.
And so I sent my 5 or 7 copies, general entry, and then also young adult. Mm-hmm. Fiction. Got emails, a long period of silence. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, well, you know, if it doesn't happen, I just don't have to tell anyone.
Right. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the emails, you know, we are only going to inform winners. So if you don't hear from us by, this was last April 21. I gave a reading at the Hunt Library on Earth Day, April 22nd, and I'm thinking, well, okay, I don't have any announcement to make, and I guess that's that. I think it was the Sunday, I get an email with the subject line, gold winner.
Oh, no way.
And at first I thought, oh, they're announcing the winners. No, wait a minute.
I am the winner.
I am a winner. Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, I think that's moxie to put it out there.
Totally. Well, I find I have a few author friends, and when I discuss with them their writing, they've all said they feel very vulnerable mm-hmm. because they are putting out there for the world to critique their kind of inner, not thoughts, but
the thing that comes from inside their brain, and it makes you vulnerable in a way because you're completely exposing yourself.
Yes.
And I think more so than with your artistry, in a way, somehow your written words are oftentimes, you know, make you even more vulnerable, at least according to, you know, many authors and writers that I've spoken with. And I just thought that that was such a interesting concept in a way. Did you feel that way too when you were writing this and working on this?
Certainly. Certainly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And still can feel that way. Although,
right.
And it's not just the brain, it's the heart.
Yes. Yes.
And putting it on the line.
Yeah.
And,
especially if you spent 10 years doing this, you're emotionally invested.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I love it. I believe in it.
Yeah.
And, but that's not up to me.
Right.
It was a Martha Graham quote, I'll paraphrase, but it's to the effect of, our job is to do it, not to judge it.
Mm.
That's theirs.
Yeah.
And we just go forward. We don't dwell on that judgment.
So do you subscribe to the saying that other people's opinion is not my business?
I value other people's opinions.
Mm-hmm.
It does matter. And because we feed from that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, just like rejection. Every artist, every creative is going to experience rejection.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Part of the process.
Part of the process.
Yeah.
And part of the growing.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we all love praise. We all thrive on that. You know, good dog. And yet, that perhaps is the paradox, is to not let that define you.
How do you draw that line then?
There's a saying in painting, mm-hmm, that an edge is not a line. Hmm. So when two forms are together,
yeah,
it's more, picture a Venn diagram or picture just a soft edge.
Yeah.
That's an edge. And so I define things more as edges than lines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not crisply delineated.
Right.
Which means it's a process of push and pull, give and take, joy and suffering, I suppose.
Right, right.
Yeah. But understanding, you're kind of weaving in and out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that... I think that's a way not to be discouraged. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just processing that still. I've never thought of it with the lines like that. And so, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a wonderful application to many things. An edge,
yes,
is not a line.
Yeah.
A line is an abstraction that we humans create.
Right.
It's not how we see. It's not how we experience the world. It's something we use as a tool.
So it's interesting because your book, What the Kekek Saw, it reminds me of a more spiritual indigenous take of a theme from Watership Down as well. I don't know if you ever read that book, Watership Down.
I have not. And actually, I avoided a lot of movies and cultures I could be in this pocket.
It's about rabbits and other animals whose field, yes, is being encroached upon. But yours is a whole different take on that, of that viewpoint of progress from the animal's perspective. And one of the lines in that book is, there are no straight lines in nature, that those are human made. And that they don't exist for the animals.
Right.
And I feel like that's kind of, spending so much time in nature, you're not seeing those lines. You're just seeing edges. Not just, you're seeing edges.
Mm-hmm. Ever since I was a kid, I had an aptitude for, in that dappled green forest, that little bit of tan, and saying, there's a deer. And so I think that may be an innate quality I have. Just a little heightened sense of observation that way.
I mean, you have to. You know, whether it's a chicken and an egg, whether you were,
yeah,
kind of born with it and you pursued paths that helped you hone it, or whether you pursued paths and honed it along the way. I mean, I don't know how you could do what you do without seeing things a bit differently or in more nuance than other people do.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I agree. And it's something I want for everyone. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's something we can cultivate, as I was talking about before, that practice of just listening, seeing right. through your ears.
Right.
And other senses.
I was saying to Thorin, I would love to hear that if you could design elementary school. I don't know if you've ever thought about, I mean, you are a teacher, so pedagogy mm-hmm. is important to you and instructional methods and content. What would an elementary school look like if it was the Peter Lefferts?
Elementary school?
Elementary school.
Or you school know, like, of
I,
elements.
I mean, I,
yeah, there you go.
I'm just envisioning there'd be no tech. There'd be lots of outdoor time. What would it look like?
My impulse is to see it as a circular building, open mm-hmm. in the middle, mm-hmm. But also looking out in all directions, mm. and I suppose up as well. And tech is, I love tech. I work in Photoshop. I love tech. I taught myself HTML once upon a time.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah, yeah. And I love what my Mac can do and I can do with it.
Yeah.
And again, I realize it's capable of far beyond what I ask of it.
Yes.
But I ask of it what I am curious about, what I need.
And you use it as a tool.
As a tool.
Not as a refuge.
I try not to. I've got a solitaire game on my phone that when I'm sitting in a doctor's office, right. I like playing cards.
But what would the kids be doing?
The kids would be definitely engaged with nature as a part of nature. And so I think back when I was in elementary school, Arbor Day was a thing. And we mm-hmm. would plant trees mm-hmm. on the school grounds. I think things that bridge our Western European constructs of education and how we define the world. We either tend to dismantle it before putting it back together, but also then the, I think we're, it's an integration of that with wisdom ways of indigenous people that actually bring in a whole nother aspect that may not be easily defined through science and Western mind thought, but brings in that element that is grander, as I see it. Mm-hmm. In other words, the old trees in the forest are the wisdom keepers.
Right.
They are actually in conversation and instructing the young forest.
Right.
Of all that's taken place. Mm-hmm. I would see my school as integrating ideas like that, along with functional needs, analytical thinking. I'm a big believer in discernment. And so, you know, when things can get pretty cosmic, be discerning. Don't get lost in it. It's okay to say, wait a minute, what's going on here? And judge for yourself in that regard. Mm-hmm. So my school would certainly have art, music, creative writing. Math, which I got to say, I remember in fourth grade, I think it was, that was a long class and it was great for drawing. So, you know, maybe a little up on the math. I can do math. But very holistic in that way and in connection to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which includes the elements, the wind. What is the wind telling us today?
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's what I would be teaching.
Well, we're at that time.
Already?
It is already. It's the time.
Okay.
For the last question.
Okay.
Thorin, do you want to hit him with it? Or do you want me to?
Go ahead, Mary.
Okay. So if you've given us a lot of different pieces of advice, but if you had to distill it down to one.
Okay.
to help someone, anyone, get a little more moxie into their life.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere in their life, too.
Any part of their
life. Any part of their life.
What would it be? Of all the things you've said, what would be the baby step?
Well, I facetiously refer to what I call the five C's, but the first one begins with a K. But you know how we love to have these, the five C's. Practice kindness. Be kind to all things. I'm not a vegetarian, but I respect that I'm eating. But it's simpler than that. It's I will hold the door for anyone as an act of kindness.
Right.
And I think we bring that into simple actions. The next one is compassion. And I think compassion goes beyond kindness, where it's just more engaged in that regard. Third is creativity. Be creative. Allow that in your life. Discipline it, but allow it. The fourth is courage. Have the courage to try. Right. Have the courage to fail. Have the courage to succeed. And the last one kind of brings it full circle is curiosity. Always be curious. And life will always be engaging. And so I think those five ideas, words, I was thinking about it too. And I want to say, do things as love, beyond rather than with love. I think with love implies, opens up to perhaps a need for a little ego gratification, recognition. Like, hey, I did this with love. If you do it as love, you are love. And you then are the instrument of love. And that's sort of that hollow bone idea. You're the instrument. And I like to say, you know, be the melody. Be the rhythm. Slap the bass and play.
That was great. Well done.
Thank you.
So, Peter, thank you so much for agreeing to come on Main Street Moxie with us. We're really grateful.
I am thrilled and deeply honored. It's great to see you again, a one-time student of mine.
Yes, yes.
And it's wonderful to meet you, Thorne.
You as well. And I so appreciate you sharing, you know, the insight into your creativity and thoughts and how you project that out and share with the world. So thank you for sharing it to our audience.
Thank you.
And it was wonderful. Thank you so much.
So Thorin, is your head about to explode?
Boom. It is. I'm going to be living with some of those philosophies, approaches, and just visions that he painted in my mind's eye for the rest of the day, hopefully the rest of the year, because, you know, let me back up. As we talked with him afterwards too, and shared some of our thoughts of our discussion, I felt a great reminder talking to him, because some of the concepts he was talking about and being in nature and being one with it and no edges, no lines, you know, this is stuff I feel like we forget in our everyday hustle and bustle. And oh my God, like he said, I have to make the 11 o'clock appointment, you know, so, or I have to go here to, you know, I can't be late. And we forget all these things, to be connected to each other, to be connected to our surroundings and the elements. And I found that to be so heartwarming. And I felt like I needed to go walk in the forest, honestly.
Well, it's Earth Day, so you could do it.
I think I will. And I hope to, you know, keep this with me in my heart and soul, because I felt so jovial. I felt lighter thinking about this and, you know, just connecting with another person and his approach and with you and us, the three of us in this room together experiencing that, but also connected to the universe and to nature. And that's something I wrote down here. We talked a little bit about it with his inspiration, but nature is nurture is what it says on his website. And that's part of his whole inspiration. And I think, you know, talking to him, which was amazing, that's his whole philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's his being. So what did you think?
Well, I definitely took all that away. Yeah. And regarding when I talk to people who are artistically creative, mm-hmm. sometimes I wish I could just open up their heads and gain insight into right. how they do it. And right. I feel like Peter, being accomplished in visual art, in music, and in writing, I would love to do. I feel like we got a glimpse into what's inside of his head.
For sure.
And I just have so much respect for that. And he's such a sharer of his mm-hmm. wisdom. Mm-hmm. He doesn't keep it to himself. He's no. really, really wants people to feel those creative impulses in themselves and give voice to them in whatever way makes sense. So I just really enjoyed talking with him.
And that kind of goes with how he ended talking about as love.
Yes.
Right? Because I know that stuck out for you.
Yes.
And for me also at the end, I have to throw this in. When he said in his five C's, well, K plus four C's, for people to have the courage to succeed.
Yeah.
That really stuck out to me and reminded me that success can be scary too.
Yes.
And so for that, and creativity was his last C there. But these are such an important things to remember and to be mindful of. And right. so I appreciate him sharing those words of wisdom that can be absolutely carried out by anyone in any circumstance and in any part of your life. So I think that was really a golden nugget of,
yes.
of advice for anyone.
And any of them would move a Moxie needle, mm-hmm, a mm-hmm. big click.
Oh, I'd say.
So, well, another good episode and happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
This episode of Main Street Moxie is proudly sponsored by Meadowscapes, a division of Matt's Landscaping, and Elise Harney Real Estate.